This podcast follows on from an unending leadership event that we held this morning with our guest speaker, Julie Nerney. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
And we're also joined by the Managing Director of Peridot, Grant Taylor. Hello, Grant.
Hello.
We're going to talk today about how you can be a different type of leader, what that actually means, and how you need to bring yourself and your values to work to be your authentic self. Julie is a fairly new chair of the Association of Colleges. She's been a leader of about 14 different organisations and was the youngest NHS non-exec director. I read a quote recently which described your CV, and it's your own quote: insects have died on a piece of paper. So it sounds like you've had an interesting leadership journey. Can you talk a little bit more about how you've become the leader that you are, and what are the most important things that you've learned?
Thanks, Emma. So I have been at work for 30 years, which makes me frightfully old. And the insects that died on a piece of paper are a consequence of me taking lots of different opportunities in life. So not a conventional career path. But I think over those 30 years, I've seen the world of work change dramatically around being task-focused to being people-focused. And I'm fairly convinced that the people focus has always been important, but the world of business and society has caught up to that now, about purpose and people being the driver of organisational success. And I learned that myself through my own journey about being focused on the what and the task at the expense of people is actually an inhibitor rather than enabler for success.
You talked a little bit earlier about how the how is really important for you, and what was that switch for you? Why is that so important now?
I think it's understanding when I started working as an interim, and you go into different organisations and you can be across different sectors and different types of situations. It was always about the culture of the organisation. It was always about how was the ingredient that made the difference. So in all of those situations, there could have been the same plans, resources, vision, people, but the way in which the work was done was where the magic happened. And so creating a culture which enabled the how to be the accelerant of performance. I firmly believe that culture is the difference between high-performing organisations and not. I think became a real differentiator for me, an understanding that as I matured in my leadership journey, that creating environments where people can be the best version of themselves is actually the most powerful and important thing that any leader can do. And that starts with setting a culture.
We talked a little bit earlier around some of the qualities that are coming up in 21st century modern leadership, qualities like empathy and patience and courage. How have you found those on your leadership journey?
I think empathy is one of the ones that really strikes a chord with me, because it's the one that's most about people. And being able to walk in other people's shoes and understand where they're coming from enables you to motivate and lead them and create followership in a different way. So I think when I, in the early part of my career, when I was very task focused, it was all about doing stuff quickly, doing it better, doing more of it, and not really thinking about the journey that you're taking people on. So being mindful of that, creating that environment where people can be the best version of themselves, understanding what drives and motivates them, and giving them a part in the story. Because any organisational story is about the leader's story and the leader's vision, and there's a personal narrative in that. But all the other members of the team who are invested in making that happen have their own stories and their own reason for being there and what they want to get out of it. And understanding that and bringing that together can really galvanise performance and success. So empathy for me, I think, is the most important thing.
And you've known Grant, I know, for about 15 years. And Peridot is 10 this year. How have you two connected on your very different leadership journeys in some ways?
I think we've connected on a really human level about what's intuitive about leadership. You know, it's not so much the theoretical stuff, it's the practical reality of what we founded Peridot Partners on has been about people at the centre and relationships. Julie talks about you know, enabling people to be the best that they can be, and that's the job of a leader. And you know, Peridot for me was an organisation that would allow people to become the kind of people they wanted to be at work. So the recruitment industry has a particular methodology and way of working that creates very successful businesses, but left me slightly cold in certain ways in terms of my work with organisations that were delivering social value. So for me, it was about enabling people to come and join the organisation and work in a way that suited them with organisations that they cared for, that had a purpose. So using words like shared purpose, using words like enabling, enabling long-term relationships between organisations and us and our consultants, rather than focusing on short-term targets and objectives, is something that we had in common intuitively and continue to have in common, in the way that we lead our organisations and our job roles.
You were quite surprised by something that Julie said earlier. You said in all the time that you've known her, it was a surprise to you. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that was?
I'm always intrigued when I hear about Julie's journey and, the beginnings that she had and, overcoming adversity and all that type of stuff. But the learning, the self-awareness that Julie has, has pitched her above the majority of people that, are in her space and at exec and non-exec levels, have put her into a different category, really. And I think, again, it's back to the human stuff, but it's that ability to reflect back and say, actually, things were broken for me. I fell down, I fell over, and those analogies that she used. But it's the learning around that. It didn't stop her. She just came back stronger. She just reflected more on what it was that created that and how she could overcome it. And, she says it took years to unlearn and to learn new things. And what that's enabled her to do is be truly authentic. And for me, when she said that period of time had enabled her to change massively and move on as a human and be more aligned to, her work and bring her real self to that in a different way. I was surprised to hear that she didn't feel that at that point it impacted differently on how people would experience her work, whereas I'm pretty sure that it did.
So it's a great example of continuous learning, though, isn't it? Yeah. Because your challenge made me reflect on that and think, actually, yes, what I'm saying that's consistent here is my technical competence and my task, and the things that you were kind of naturally good at were unchanged. But you were absolutely right to challenge me in that space. And that's what's so important about learning, is it never stops. Your reflective practice doesn't stop. And every time I talk about my story, somebody will pick up. I had great conversations with people at the end of the event today, and they all took something differently, but they all gave me something new to think about and made me think about how I might share that story in the future. And that, for me, I think, is the key to great leadership. To lead, you have to have a level of confidence to put your head above the parapet, to put yourself in a lonely place where you get very poor feedback and you're quite isolated. But you have to have humility alongside that, because that self-awareness to know that you don't have all the answers, that learning never stops, is really important. If you don't have that humility alongside the confidence, then that confidence tips into arrogance, mm-hmm. and then you don't create followership and you lose your sense of purpose and identity. Mm-hmm. And listening to what Grant was saying about Peridot's journey as well, when people talk about culture being a soft subject, I mean, I think you should do it because it's a human thing to do and it's the right thing to do. It's not a soft subject. It absolutely is a differentiator in performance. And the reason that Peridot's gone from strength to strength is it lives its values and its culture in a way which is distinct from the rest of its industry, and it creates competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. And there are countless brands and organisations that you can look to who leverage that in a way which has integrity and has meaning for its people, but is also incredibly successful in the fields that they operate in. Yeah. It matters.
Well, one of the things I took from today, and we haven't talked about it yet, is the characteristic of love. Mm. That's about loving what you do. We love what we do, but it's about loving yourself. This is the second leadership event, network event that we've had. The first one, it didn't come up really. I don't recognise it. I don't remember it as much.
No, I don't think it
is. But today it resonated with me. We had a CEO from a hospice environment who demonstrated a different level of understanding of what that meant in their leadership journey. But for me, at the point I'm in currently in the year and where I'm at, that meant a lot to actually just think and reflect on, actually, I need to put myself first sometimes. I need to have a love for myself and protect, my own health and well-being before I can enable others to do the same. Maybe it's something leaders don't think of naturally, intuitively. It's a bit of a soft word. I feel slightly embarrassed talking about it now for some reason. I don't know why. But it really resonated today. And I'm going to go out of this room later and I'm going to think about actually how I can make sure that I'm in tune with myself first and foremost more of the time.
And the word love has such connotations. We talked a lot about language today, creativity meaning different things to different people, and of course love, when you're having that conversation at work, feels like it's a personal word, not a work word. But it's about kindness and it's about compassion and self-love, and I think when you have the drive to lead, you can often not take care of yourself. And I used the analogy earlier about, you know, put your own oxygen mask on before you help others. If you're not fit and well and able, then how can you be the kind of leader that is enabling and facilitating your team to be, you know, the best version of themselves, to operate in a way which is productive and healthy? So we're our own worst critics sometimes, and we're harsh on ourselves, and we do need to be kinder to ourselves. Yeah. That balance between confidence and humility. If you take the humility too far and you wear the hair shirt, then actually you stop loving yourself and you stop leading well, I think. So that keeping that in balance, I think, is really important.
Well, you were very sort of candid about the fact that you weren't operating as yourself both at home and work.
Yeah.
And that broke you.
Yeah, exactly. And I was chasing achievement at work to give myself some kind of value as a human being. Because I didn't value myself as a human being for a whole host of reasons to do with my past and my upbringing. And actually, that carries with it a sense of shame and stigma that comes with that. And so work me had this, you know, very bright, shiny, professional, successful persona, but I'd be at home and not feeling great about myself. That disconnect isn't healthy. Mm-hmm. And so what was driving me to work wasn't healthy. Actually, the work that I do is very similar, and, you know, to Grant's challenge earlier, people probably experienced me differently. So it's not that I've changed what I do, but I'm just more connected to it, and it feels more authentic. But I also, it sits with me. It's kind of almost fitting into your own skin. Mm-hmm. Kind of you stretch out your limbs and just kind of stretch into your fingertips and your toes. It's like, oh, there's me. And that's nice. It's nice to be you, warts and all. You know, none of us are perfect, but it's a better experience to have, and it's a more real experience that you bring to your work. And it's part of that leadership story, and it's part of creating that followership. You're a believable human being. We all have flaws, you know. And I started talking about my journey because somebody encouraged me to do so, and I was very nervous about doing that. But I realised it gave permission to other people to talk about that too. There's something about, we can't show that we're fallible or vulnerable, thinking about the conversation we had earlier, that there's some kind of failure associated with that. Actually, we're all human beings, right? And we all have great days and we all have crappy days.
It's really, really interesting for me that there was a discussion, quite a lot of discussion around boards and governance in this session today as well. But we were talking about the vulnerability, and it's in context. So some people felt that being vulnerable with their teams was something that was viable and useful and helpful and, you know, all of that. But actually showing vulnerability with the board was not something that they would be prepared to do because it's construed differently. And the board's role is different. And it could say more about the board than that individual, but that's how they felt. And there was a definite theme around how human you could be, how much of a modern leader you could be when you've got a governance structure and a board around you of people that don't recognise those modern traits.
Yeah, and there's an interesting leadership challenge, isn't it? Because when I think, so I've sat on dozens of boards now, I'm chair of three organisations. The board is the leadership body for the organisation. It might not be the executive function that's there day in, day out, but it should be the strategic guiding mind for the organisation. It should be setting the tone around culture and behaviour. So actually hearing that today made me realise what a disconnect is, that work, both generationally and societally, is moving on, and leadership is moving on. But the generational divide that you tend to have, because it is typically older board members, means that there is that disconnect. And unless that board relationship with the chief exec, as a trustee or an ex officio member, are working as a team, as a leadership team, then there'll be a disconnect between governance and the day-to-day activities of the organisation, which is actually a real risk.
It's one of the biggest risks for the sector at the moment. You know, if we're wanting to affect change and better leadership, then, you know, it always, for me, comes back to boards and the governance structures as the enablers. And, you know, they should be modelling the leadership characteristics that we need. But actually what we're finding is that they're counterintuitive to it often. So, something to think on.
And there's also something which you mentioned before about how you don't really like the term resilience and how that can almost be a blocker when people keep going when actually they don't need to, and they put up a barrier, and they're not, again, it's being authentic.
It is, and it's that kind of move, isn't it, from the kind of hero leadership where you have all the answers, you are the font of all knowledge, you run up the mountain and expect everybody to follow you. You never show any weakness or vulnerability, you never say, I don't know, and you just keep going no matter what. You know, and I know to my personal cost that that's not a healthy place to be in. But I much prefer the use of the word agency. It's one of my chief execs from one of the organisations I chair use this, so I shamelessly have nicked it, because when you hear good things, you should always appropriate them. And he talks about agency, and agency being about the power to shape and control and develop the environment you're in. And it's a much more empowering and owning quality. Resilience implies I'm in the middle of something that might be really quite difficult and tricky, but I'm just going to stand here stoically and keep going while people are throwing rocks at me. That doesn't help, does it? And it's incredibly disempowering because you're just on the receiving end of something. Whereas having real agency and having agency in your leadership to say, okay, I'm going to shape my environment so it's not like this anymore, I think has more power for you as a leader and for your teams.
But it's quite courageous to be able to do that, and particularly if you're a chief exec with a board, being able to ask for help or have a response from a board that's going to support you and you feel that you can do that, which I think that's where a lot of boards and chief exec relationships struggle.
Yeah, and you know, with every chief exec I've worked with as a chair, and I have three at the moment, and they're all very different and they're at different stages in their own leadership journey, but we always have a really open conversation about how are we going to work together, about our respective roles and contributions, what the balance looks like, and we create an environment where you have this challenge of needing to be a leadership team and a partnership, particularly if you're dealing with external stakeholders and presenting that kind of front, to also being the chair, being the chief exec's line manager in terms of performance appraisal. But also, when you're the chief exec, it's lonely, and I've been the chief exec over a dozen times, and you have nowhere to go. So having a chair that you can pick up the phone with and go, can I just pick your brains about this for a bit? It's not about line management, it's not about leadership. So you actually have these three things that have to work in tandem around that relationship, and you have to be overt about that and explicit about which mode you're operating in order for that to be effective. And when that works well, you get a relationship where a chief exec is very open and you have no surprises. You can present a united but not cozy front at a board, and you manage the board and the direction of the organisation. But it's not without challenge. It's that balance between challenge and support, that productive tension that you need to have between the two relationships. People don't invest enough time in having that conversation and setting those ground rules at the outset. If you do that, I think you then get into a situation, one of my chief execs who will gladly come to a board meeting to go, I don't know, what do you think? Because they value the fact they've assembled a board which is aligned to our strategy, which is going to have value and expertise, and we have a genuine conversation. I've sat in too many meetings, board meetings as a chief exec, where I've left the room and I'm ashamed to say, will go, that's 3 hours of my life I'm never getting back, because it utterly made no difference to what I'm doing. Yeah. So as a chair of a board now, I say, I never want a member of my executive team to ever feel like that. If they don't leave this room and feel like they've got something from that meeting and we've added value in some small way, then what's the point of the board?
Yeah, and it's that agency as well.
Yeah, and that creates the agency to make the change. Yeah.
It's amazing how many people still don't think like that. The board is there because it needs to be there, because you have the responsibilities to govern. Whatever context you're in, whether it's a, you know, education, college, or, you know, charity, social enterprise, and not enough organisations or CEOs see the benefit in assembling a group of people that can really stretch their thinking, that can provide that support network for them. Yes, it could be more challenging at times, but oh, you're going to make such a difference, and you're going to be a more effective leader. Your outcomes are going to be better. It's going to supercharge your career. Why wouldn't you do it?
And why wouldn't you want your board and your leadership team to be exhibiting the kind of qualities that we talked about today? If you look at the palette of those things, so courage and conviction is about having ambition, leading the organisation. Patience, in terms of, I've seen some boards drive organisations too hard, too fast, and that's not sensible. Creativity, in terms of taking a new direction or not standing still so the organisation doesn't stagnate. But also the qualities around vulnerability and empathy. That enables them to lead and work with their executive team more effectively. If you're in a social enterprise or not-for-profit sector, empathy with your service users, with other parts of the organisation. These leadership qualities are for everybody in a leadership role. So you could be in a non-executive role or an executive role, or you could be anywhere in an organisation where you have a leadership voice. And that matters. All of those qualities matter. And it's about getting that mix of those qualities, again, so you get that right challenge, the support and challenge around it all.
Thank you both very much for your time. I think one of the things that we would like to pick up on another podcast is around future leaders, because that was something that people really talked about earlier today as well, and how that kind of giving people agency, inspiring them, because these are the future leaders coming up.
Yeah.
So thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you, Julie.